Good evening and welcome to Local Motion, where we go in-depth with local public affairs from around the KVNF listening area. I'm Laura Palmisano. April is National Autism Awareness Month. In recognition of this, we'll hear from two people living with autism. We'll also hear an interview with a behavior analyst who works with autistic individuals. Temple Grandin is a well-known advocate for autism awareness and a professor of animal sciences at Colorado State University. In January, she came to Grand Junction to speak at an autism conference as someone who has autism. I sat down with Grandin before her talk. Temple, how would you describe autism?
Autism is a developmental disorder where the wiring in the nervous system is different. And genetics is a big component of it. There's probably about 60 or 70% genetic component. And autism varies from very mild to the geeks and nerds at Silicon Valley to somebody that remains nonverbal. I can't emphasize enough, if you have a three-year-old child that's not talking, the worst thing you can do is to do nothing. You've got to start working with that child right now.
What are some of the challenges people with autism face?
Well, one of the problems is autism is a very big spectrum. You might have one individual that remains nonverbal, that has to live in a supervised living situation. Then you have another person that's just socially awkward because some of the social circuits aren't hooked up. But they often have great talents in things like art, mathematics, or writing. And people with autism have to learn social skills like being in a foreign country. I went to China recently, and I learned if I point with one finger, that's rude. I have no way of knowing that unless somebody tells me that. All social rules have to be taught in that manner.
What are some of the misconceptions about autism?
Well, if you had no autism at all, there'd be no radio equipment. Because the people that are interested in things are not the ones that are the most social. Half of Silicon Valley's got a little bit of autism. Einstein had no language until age 3. He would probably be labeled autistic today in most states.
What do you want people to know about people who have autism?
First of all, the diagnostic label is not precise. It's only about half based in science. And there's some kids that have the same geeky, nerdy, socially awkward traits, and they're on a gifted track. What I want is I want to see kids, regardless of what they're labeled, be successful. You see, we're getting more and more kids, especially on the mild ends of these spectrums, getting labeled dyslexic, ADHD, autistic, you know, this, that, learning problems. And there needs to be a lot more emphasis in the school systems on developing the strengths, like art. Recently, I was just at a meeting, and a mom showed me beautiful art that her daughter had done. I said, you need to go professional. This is professional grade stuff. You can go pro, and you can go pro right now. People with autism have uneven skills. Some are visual thinkers. That's going to be more the art mind. Some are mathematical thinkers. Some are word thinkers. Build up the strengths.
A woman named Sani I know has autism, and she says that you've inspired her to share her artwork with others. How does autism lend itself to the creative process?
Well, when you take out some of the social circuits, then you build some extra circuits, maybe for art, mathematics, or for writing ability. Some people with autism, not all of them, but some of them are extremely good at art. Then build up that skill. If your art's good enough, you can make a living doing art. Go out and do it. My ability in art was always encouraged, and I used art skills in my design work on cattle handling facilities.
As you said, you've created architectural drawings. How do you think having autism helps you see the world differently and express yourself through creative forms?
Well, you have a tendency to ask a lot of very abstract questions. I'm going to bet you are a verbal thinker. If I say to you, think about a church steeple, how does that come into your mind?
Like a church steeple.
Is it generalized or a specific one?
Probably more like on a Catholic church.
Well, that's still somewhat generalized. I only see specific ones, and I can name where they're located in the neighborhood. You know, I think in pictures, so that helped me in my work with animals. What tends to happen in autism is to have uneven skills. Good at one thing, might be very good at one thing, and very bad at something else. Let's build up the skill area.
Temple, you are a professor of animal sciences at Colorado State University. You are known for your work that's improved the conditions for livestock. What led you to this path?
Well, students get interested in things they get exposed to. And I went to my aunt's ranch when I was a teenager, and I got exposed to beef cattle. I think what big problem we have today is a lot of kids are not getting exposed to enough different careers. You know, the only animal career that students get exposed to today is veterinary. That's why you've got 10 students for every veterinary slot. You know, veterinary is a good career, but there's lots of other careers. But the students are not getting exposed to them. I think taking the hands-on classes out of the schools is the worst thing they ever did. You know, cooking, sewing, art, theater, music, woodworking, welding, because these are all things that can turn into careers.
That was Temple Grandin, an advocate for autism awareness and a professor at Colorado State University. Sani Seto is a Paonia-based artist with autism. She talked to me about living with autism and her artwork. Sani, tell me about your autism.
Autism is a spectrum disorder or disability that could range from very severe or low end of the spectrum to genius level, which is the very high end of the spectrum, to anywhere in between, which is considered moderate. I am moderate to HFA, meaning high functioning. Autism affects how an individual processes the environment around them. Noise that don't bother most people is painful to an autistic person. Fluorescent lights and other types of lighting hum and cycle, and plus we can hear that very loud, and that is very overstimulating to an autistic person. The autistic brain processes differently than a neurotypical brain. And one of my favorite analogies is you have a kitchen with two sinks in it. Your sink would have a filter in it which would filter out everything around you. The autistic brain, that would be sink number two, has no filter. Therefore, everything comes in and hits you all at once. It is like being a radio station. You pick up all signals and all frequencies at once, and it overloads you to a meltdown.
Sani, what are some of the challenges you've experienced living with autism?
Many, mostly social. Inability to read faces, body language, and do eye contact. Inability to understand what other people are feeling or thinking. Yet I don't lack compassion. Autistic people do have empathy, but we process emotions differently. It does not mean we lack them. The other things I face with autism is from the environment. Like I said, noise and light, touch, smells, everything affects you because with autism you cannot block out around you or tune out the environment. Autism also affects your ability to communicate. I did not learn to speak till I was 12 or 13 and had to have speech therapy for a long time. The doctor said I would never speak, let alone live on my own. When I am overstimulated or tired or stressed, autism will take your words from you. And I mean that literally. You can't get your words to come out, and you have to talk loud or scream to force your words out to communicate. Autism affects many things in your life, not just one or two. Autism is a developmental disability. You have to learn how to manage the symptoms every day. And it's not easy when you live in an environment that is so polluted with noise and light.
To go outside, you use what you call preps. Can you talk to me about your preps and how they help you be able to go into a world that's not made for someone who has autism?
My preps consist of my earplugs, which go on underneath my headband, followed by my hat, which helps block out the light, and my dark glasses, which helps to block out the light. Over that go on headphones, which also help to block the noise stimulation from coming into my brain. Plus, when I'm outside a lot, I wear my awareness attire to help educate people about autism so they don't think you're on drugs and stuff because you stim or you don't act normal like they do. And normal, by the way, is different for everybody My preps give me freedom to be able to be outside for longer periods of time, because if you don't have your preps on and you go out, you get overloaded and you risk having a meltdown in public. Meltdowns are different than a temper tantrum. A meltdown results from all your senses being overloaded at once.
Sonny, you use art to express yourself and to help calm yourself. Talk to me about why you love art and what it offers for you.
Art is very soothing. It's a way to express my emotions onto paper. They always told me that I was born with a palette in one hand and a paintbrush and canvas in another, because I've been drawing since I was about 2 or 3 and I've never had no lessons. Art is soothing, it's repetitious, and I thrive on repetition. I love the feel of the ink from the pen onto the paper. I love the ideas merging to come out as images, because I'm a very visual person. I think in images and pictures than I do with words. And art is mostly how I prefer to communicate my ideas about things that are important to me. Art is stress relieving. Art is creativity. It is thoughts and images coming out of your brain and expressed as energy onto the paper. It is the soul of the artist that comes out onto the paper through their work. Art is a universal way of communication that is understood by everyone, just like music.
What do you like to draw, Sonny?
I mostly love to draw eagles. I like to do mechanical drawings. I love to do entomology, which is insects, and oceanography, which is marine biology and invertebrates. I love to draw those subjects. I love to draw things in nature like leaves and twigs and animals and mountains. I love nature. I love animals because I can interact with them with no problem, unlike people.
What kind of materials do you use when you draw?
Well, for the black paper, I like to use metallic silvers and golds and Sharpie metallics, which come through pinks and greens and blues, because the black paper does not overstimulate as much as the white. So I use the metallic markers on the black paper. For the white paper, I prefer to use Sharpies, extra fine point to micro, and medium point tip. When I do a picture that's going to take a lot of surface area to cover, I use the bold point or the medium point to cover a large area. For extra fine detailing work, I like to use the micro point. And Beryl Prismacolors are one of the best art mediums they are as far as pens, because they're fade resistant and the original coloring can last several years. But I mostly prefer to do pen and ink because I love the feel of the ink as it comes out of the pen onto the paper. That is very soothing. Although some pens I do not use because of the smell. They need to make the paint formula that does not have such bad smells to them, so that's why I'm very cautious about the kind of brands of pens I use because of the smell.
One of the things that you do is you make greeting cards. The back of your cards have a message on them about autism awareness. Talk to me about that message.
Autism awareness extends beyond just simple awareness. It extends into acceptance, which also comes along with tolerance and accommodation for people with autism. And in this society, if you are different, are you disabled, you're looked as being as lesser or not as good as anybody else. And in this society, if you have hidden disabilities like autism, you're bullied more than if you have so-called visible disabilities. Society needs autism awareness so they can learn how to accommodate people with autism.
Your artwork is part of a show that's going on at the Blue Sage. Tell me about the show and the pieces that you have on display.
The show is for people that have disabilities, and it is called Normal is a Dryer Setting. because normal is different for everybody. There is no such thing as a so-called normal. What is normal for a neurotypical person would be their normal, whereas autism would be my normal. The show that will be on will be showing the art ability of people with disabilities, showing that we do have talent and that we do have something to offer to the community expressed through our artwork. The only true disability, in my opinion, is society failing to recognize the abilities that disabled people have and give.
Thank you for your time, Sonny.
And thank you.
That was artist Sonny Seto. You can see some of her drawings on display at the Blue Sage Gallery in Paonia through April 4th. If you are just joining us, this is Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Laura Palmisano. Dr. Jim Ball is the executive director of the Autism Society's Board of Directors. He's also a behavior analyst who works with autistic people. I spoke with Ball to find out more about his work. Tell me about your job.
I am a private consultant that works with a vast variety of individuals on the spectrum. My youngest individual right now is about 28 months, and my oldest is 65. And they all have varying degrees of issues, you know, depending on their autism. So with some of them, I'm working in job development. Others, I'm working through their college years. Others, I'm helping through their education years. And my little ones, you know, getting them ready for school-aged opportunities. And I also work with school districts and agencies throughout the country on designing programs specifically for individuals with an autism spectrum disorder.
How did you get into this line of work?
The interesting part is I have really no special ed background. My undergrad is in history education. My master's is in counseling psych, which is probably the degree I use most. And my doctorate is in neurotypical development, so understanding how, you know, neurotypical kids develop. So years ago, when I was in college, I had the opportunity through playing football at the collegiate level, being able to help out with a Sunday morning program. They called it something like the Friendship Program, and our coach asked us to go and work with the individuals that came in, and I didn't know that these individuals had autism, but and I'm going back to the 80s when I started doing this, so it wasn't even that well known at that point, and ended up working with some of the kids. And then when I started my master's program, I needed a day job, so I looked in the newspaper, and Eden Institute in Princeton, which is a very prestigious private school for individuals on the spectrum, was hiring, and it said they needed a therapist. And I'm like, oh, okay, my master's is in counseling, so I'll be called a therapist when I'm done. So I went over and met my first kid on the spectrum there and worked there for many years and fell in love with the kids and their families and have been doing it ever since.
You've been working with individuals with autism for 3 decades. What have you seen change over the years when it comes to treating individuals with autism?
There have been a lot of really exciting changes for individuals on the spectrum. The number one in my career has really been the emphasis on early intervention and early diagnosis. We know that through the research, the earlier we diagnose the child, the better the quantity and quality of the services are, the better the prognosis is long term. And when I started in the field, I was working with individuals that weren't diagnosed until they were 4, 5, or 6. Now we're diagnosing kids, you know, as early as 2 years. And we would know that, you know, through the research also, the brain plasticity and all of those types of things really help in their development, especially when you get them at the early ages.
What are some of the new methods used to teach and help individuals with autism?
I don't think there's a lot of new stuff out there, to be honest with you. I think a lot of people have repackaged what's been there for a long time and really looking at where the individual's at, how they learn, and using the strategies that are the most effective to motivate them to want to use the skill. And I still think it goes back to those basics. I think it, for the individuals that are at the more able end of the spectrum, you know, we've done a lot more with cognitive behavioral therapy, which targets behavior as the change agent, just like we would for a child who's a little bit more significantly challenged. But at the more intellectual level, so we're talking about it more and giving real concrete strategies to use. And I think that's a little bit different, but a lot of the other stuff has been around a long time because I'm still talking about things that I used 30 years ago that are just effective today as they were then.
What are some of the challenges autistic individuals still face?
The challenges that are still out there are, from a research perspective, why? We still really don't have a firm grip on why this is occurring or why the numbers are so large at this point. I mean, when I started in the field, again, in the 80s, the diagnosing rate was 1 in about 10 to 15,000. So for every 10 to 15,000 babies that were born, one would be diagnosed with an autism spectrum disorder. Now, according to the Center for Disease Control, it's 1 in 68. Yes, we've probably gotten better at diagnosing it, but I don't think that's the only reason. And I think that for families, that is a big piece of the puzzle also, is why is this occurring? Why does this happen? And in working in the field, I think behaviorally, a lot of our individuals will have some difficulties, especially in social situations. So when people see them at first, if they're not used to working with individuals or understanding individuals on the spectrum, they may see these types of behaviors as menacing. They might see them as rude or abrupt when they're just the individuals and how they manifest their, you know, their autism in their way.
You've mentioned spectrum a few times. Tell our listeners what this means and how this scale is used to treat individuals with autism.
Autism is a spectrum because you can have kids on the very challenged end of the spectrum that are kids that are nonverbal, rely on some type of augmentative communication device to communicate, and are self-injurious and or aggressive when they can't articulate their needs or wants very effectively. All the way up through individuals who will go to college, get jobs, get married, have their own kids, but still deal with some of the similarities of even the more challenged kid on the spectrum. And autism manifests itself in three different ways. It manifests itself in behavior, in social skills, and then in communication skills. And in all of the aspects of the individuals on the spectrum, they have some type of deficit area in one, if not all, of those three areas when you look at their overall profile. So a person that's more able on the spectrum could still be challenged with some behaviors, but they might not be as overt as a child that's more challenged, where they'll hit themselves in the head when they get frustrated, where an Asperger's person or a person on the more able end of the spectrum may, their meltdown may look a little different. They may just be very frustrated and, you know, clench their fists or let out a yell just to let that release go. So they're manifesting their autism in different ways, but it's for the same function.
What are some common misconceptions you've heard about individuals with autism?
I think the most common is that they don't feel like we feel. I think a lot of people look at them and don't think that they understand the world around them, especially the kids that are a little bit more challenged. When you really do deal with them and you really do get to know them, they're understanding a lot more than you give them credit for. And the people who are on the spectrum that can articulate for themselves very well, the self-advocates, they explain that. They can explain that to you. It's the individuals that are a little bit more challenged. And I think we don't look at them as, you know, individuals that have these types of feelings like we do. I mean, they love like we do, they hate like we do, they're angry like we are. It's just their way and how they express it. And as I look at it, as my job is to help them to do it in a more functionally appropriate way, but also to help them to navigate environments that might bring about some of these feelings, so that if they're in those environments frequently, then they get used to those environments, so therefore they don't have those types of meltdowns that people will see that will, you know, for lack of a better term, shun them from any kind of social enjoyment. And I think, you know, the other thing is that a lot of people think individuals on the spectrum are not social. I don't find that at all. I think they're extremely social. It's just sometimes they don't know how to be, and we need to teach it. And that's the one thing I harp on, especially when I do a lot of trainings, is don't assume anything with any person on the spectrum. Because when you assume things, you know what happens. You know that whole, you know, adage. Teach first. If the kid knows it or the adult knows it, then you've just reinforced a skill. If they didn't know it, you've taught a new skill. And it's all about teaching. Because if you think about how we're raised and how we do things, we've been taught a lot of these behaviors. We've been taught a lot of things that we do. And it's the same with a person on the spectrum. It's just getting them in that position to be ready to learn.
Thank you for your time, Jim.
Thank you.
That was behavior analyst and Autism Society board member, Dr. Jim Ball. You've been listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Laura Palmisano. Stay tuned for As the Worm Turns, coming up next. Thank you.